Yo, what up, guys? It's Joyce. Currently, it is August 29th, and the last episode I released was May 13th. So, it's been a little while. I needed to take time and space to really reevaluate what I wanted to put out there, and that's what this whole podcast is about, right? Being able to figure out what legacy it is that I want to leave behind. The more I thought about it, the more I realized I didn't really want to be the abundance coach anymore. I created and redirected my brand to be called Chasing Embers. It's where I share really honest and vulnerable perspectives of my life, and I share my learnings about emotions, relationships, and continue reminding people about what's important in life. So what hasn't changed is I want to keep asking the big questions, and I want to continue talking about the things that not a lot of people are talking about. Now I feel like there's a lot more openness for me to be human. I felt like the term coach kind of created a separation between me and the audience, as if I know better, as if I am more infallible. But the truth is, coaches are human too. And there were a lot of things that I felt like I couldn't share because it didn't have to do with productivity and purpose and meaning. And, you know, topics like sexual assault, about religion, about meditation, and also just general topics around seeking evolution and personal growth. The last 2-3 months, you know, I started a new job at a little startup out in San Francisco. I'm doing a lot of work for them that I did for the Abundance Coach. I'm creating content, I'm writing case studies, and all these things. And I'm realizing that the leftover energy that I have, I want to be able to give towards creating something I'm passionate about that isn't necessarily driving towards monetization or trying to, you know, sell some sort of business idea, because that always felt a little bit disingenuous to me. So here I am, and I've rebranded as Chasing Embers. Thank you so much to everybody who's reached out and checked up on me and asked me if I'm okay and was willing to chat with me about where I'm at. Really, I hope that this is the brand that I stick with for a while, because it's a brand that I'm passionate about and is flexible enough that I can talk about a variety of things. And hopefully it'll be flexible enough for me to grow into. So as I talk about more and more things and different topics, it'll adapt to whatever it is I'm passionate about at that moment. I'm just grateful to everybody who still continues to listen and find value in this podcast. And at the end of the day, I'm still somebody who advocates for abundance, who is excited about abundance, who wants to talk about abundance. And I also have a bunch of recordings that I haven't edited yet that I really want to. So for the month of September, I'm going to be releasing the remaining episodes that I have stored up. And after that, that'll be the conclusion to the first season of the Abundance Podcast. And the second season, I think, will be a little bit different. I don't know what it's going to be about yet, but feel free to reach out to me at _chasingembers, and we can talk about it. You know, now my brand is super wide open. There are a lot of things that interest me about life and emotions and relationships that I'm super excited to dig into. So I'm open to suggestions. If there are things you want me to talk about, people you want me to interview, or topics you want me to get deeper into, please let me know. I'll do my best to include those things, because at the end of the day, it's a relationship, and I want to be able to create the content that y'all find valuable. We're back after a little bit of a hiatus, back to a conversation with one of my dear friends, Ray. This was one of the best conversations I've had. I mean, honestly, all of the conversations I've had because of this podcast have been so incredible. This one was so meaningful to me. I'm pretty sure both Ray and I cried in this one. We both shared things that we haven't shared before with other people. There's a lot of vulnerability, there's a lot of raw stories, and I hope you enjoy. Let's get into it. Yeah, so for a little bit of context, right, for people listening, Ray and I, she saw one of my posts on Instagram where I'm dressed like a hoe. And it was a post where I was talking about finding myself, right? Mm. Because I was dressed, you know, not wearing a lot of clothing. It was basically lingerie in one of the busiest streets of Austin. And there was a whole story behind that. And I think I shared that in an earlier episode, but basically you commented on that, right? And you were like, oh my gosh, this was also me a few years ago.
Yes.
And then I looked into what you do and I was like, wait, this is actually so fitting because you talk all about finding your voice and things like that. And I probably could have really used you at that point in time when I was lost. So if you don't mind just like introducing yourself and sharing a little bit of what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I'm a speaking coach, ex-club promoter. So what I did was very similar. 3-4 years ago, I was actually working in a nightclub. So many people can't believe it. Right now, I'm a speaking coach and impact-driven entrepreneurs work with me to own their unique voice and share their heart's message to the world. So essentially what I do is to really work with people to help them find what about their voice makes them unique, their inner voice and their physical voice, so that they will never compare themselves with others. And the reason why this is something that is so close to my heart is because I have compared myself with others since young, like constantly. When I was in primary school, so that was when I was 12, 13 years old, it was based on looks. I look at others and I wish that I was taller. I'm 5'0", so I wish I was taller. I wish I was prettier. I didn't even want to look in the mirror, to be honest. There were times that when I showered, I didn't even want to look at my body. And when it went to, I think it's called high school, so that was when I was 16, 17 years old, I compared myself with others based on academics. So I always felt very stupid, to be honest, because I had to work twice as hard to get like a C or a B grade, where I can see friends who would effortlessly get an A and go on dean's list. So to me, I was just always thinking like, why don't I have anything that I'm good at? You know, and I constantly compared myself with others, constantly felt small until I found my unique voice, which I'm sure we'll dive into later on. And right now, you know, I am able to talk to people who are like 3 times my age. I have clients that are like 50 plus. I just had dinner with the top real estate agent, one of the top lawyers in Singapore yesterday. And I'm not saying this to brag, but it's more of 3 years ago, Ray would be terrified to be in that dinner because I'll be like so afraid of sounding stupid. So that is the power of finding your unique voice. And that's exactly why I help people do that now.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that people listening probably can really relate, you know, because I think everybody finds themselves competing in our world. And it's really hard not to because, you know, you have social media and, you know, you see people across the world, like you're in Singapore, I'm in Dallas, and it's just easy to compare, right? Because that's all you see. You don't really see the real person. And I'm curious about that, actually. When you work with your clients, do you also train them or walk them through social media representation? You know, it's just through pictures, through words, and maybe through videos, right? But that must be a big part of it as well.
100%. Yeah. And many of the clients that I work with, interestingly, it's not the comparison on social media that, even though that could be a potential issue, but many of times, fear of speaking up, it's actually traced back to childhood trauma. Yeah, so that is usually like the root cause, which even caused the comparison in the first place. So for example, maybe when they were young, they were very outspoken, but their parents shut them down out of anger, or maybe because their parents at that point of time could be very stressed out at work and just said like, shut up, like, stop it. and planted a seed in their mind that it's not good to speak up, you know? So that could be an issue, usually due to trauma. Even one of the financial advisors that I'm working with now, who do compare herself with others quite a lot, I think the reason being, since young, she was in an environment that was very safe and she didn't really have chance to fail. So for her, she was in a very protected environment. So when she went into the financial advisory industry, which is very competitive, she suddenly got shook and she's like, oh my goodness, what is happening? And she had to learn how to find her voice. So many a times it's also looking deeper as to where that comparison comes from. Yeah, because social media, I think, propagates the comparison, but usually the social comparison has a deeper root cause, like unworthiness. You know, for me, for example, I didn't go into social media until I was 15, but I compared myself with others way before 15. So social media just highlighted that, right? Yeah. So it's really going back to the past on why I compared, me feeling like I wasn't accepted into conversations, or, you know, me telling negative stories in my mind and having to heal from the past trauma. So many a times, the first coaching session that I have with my clients, we actually go through limiting beliefs, and I'll teach them how to befriend fear of public speaking. Okay, and that we'll actually cover during the first session. And the reason why I do that is because I realize that many of us don't lack the skill of public speaking. Our mind actually stops us from speaking up in the first place. And that usually is the main root cause of, like, not speaking up or not owning a voice, which is why I have that limiting beliefs and befriending fear portion before I actually equip my clients with the skill sets on how to speak better, how to speak better on camera, how to network, how to brand yourself, etc. So yeah.
That's awesome. No, I love that. I love that you took it there, because, you know, it's interesting to see how people will answer certain things. Do you think that, so comparison is one reason some people don't speak up, right? Do you think it's the main reason? What other reasons have you seen that keep people from speaking up?
I love that question. Okay, so the thing is, many a times the reason that they say that keeps them from speaking up is actually just a surface level reason. There's always a deeper reason, right? So for example, if let's say I ask, you know, why are you afraid of speaking? Why are you afraid of this presentation? And maybe my client goes, yeah, I just feel unprepared, or I'm just afraid that I don't do well. But usually I ask them, okay, so if you don't do well, what does that mean? Okay. And then maybe they'll say something like, I mean, if I don't do well and I fail, like, what will my colleagues think of me? Then I'll ask, right? So what do you think your colleagues will think of you? What are you afraid of them thinking of you about? I'm afraid that they'll think that I'm not smart. I'm afraid that they'll think I'm stupid. I'm not experienced enough. Then you ask deeper, right? I'll ask them deeper. So if they think that way, how does it make you feel? And usually the root reason, the root fear, is fear of being insignificant, fear of judgment, fear of rejection, fear of not being seen as good enough. And usually that is the root fear. So the thing is, how can we embrace the fear and still do it anyway? Because if you let that fear consume you, fear is normal, right? So if you're hearing this right now, I want to assure you that fear is completely normal. I fear too. In fact, if you don't fear, it means that you're not going out of your comfort zone enough. It means that you're comfortable. But the thing is, how can you embrace the fear and do it anyway? Because when you take action, that's when you build confidence, and the fear will slowly, slowly dissipate.
So then I would love to hear about an experience in your life where you first learned that, like, how to embrace your fear, and why that, you know, is so powerful for you.
Oh, okay. I would love to hear this from you as well. We can totally exchange stories, because I think that I'm sure you also have similar experiences or different experiences of fear that I can hear from as well. But I'll share. Okay. So fear, I would say that my most memorable incident of fear, like the strongest one, was in university year one. So when I was in year one in university, I've already been hosting events for like 4 years. So many people knew me as like MC Ray. Okay. And I think that I used that title of MC and speaker as my identity. And I held on to it so much. Like, if I don't do well at anything speaking related, my identity is taken away from me. Okay, so I held it on so much. Just think about it. All my life, I've been comparing myself with others. That means that when I finally found speaking and emceeing as my thing, I held it on so tightly. I'm like, I cannot screw any speaking or emceeing thing up. Otherwise, my identity is gone. Which, by the way, it's not a good idea. That's very dangerous. Attach your identity to anything like that, right? So my first year of university, many people knew me as Speaker Ray, MC Ray. And there was one module where we had to do impromptu speaking. So I had to go all the way to the front of the stage, pick the topic out of the bag, and talk about it on the spot. And I was terrified. So I can't prepare for an impromptu speaking assignment. Like, you can't prepare, it's impromptu. So, well, it was not a choice. I had to do it. It was graded. So I went all the way to the front of the class. And I could feel like my heart boom, 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 boom. And I was just like thinking, what if I screw up? What if I fail? People are going to think that I'm a fraud. People are going to think that, hey, like, is she a fake MC? She's not good at all. So many thoughts were going through my mind. And I really felt my whole body heating up. Okay. So if you're listening to this right now, just so you know, fear is normal. Fear of speaking is normal. I also feel the same effects. I went to the front of the stage, picked the topic out of the bag, and my mind just went blank, completely blank. I can't even remember what's on that paper. 30 seconds passed, 1 minute passed, 2 minutes passed. My teacher was saying, Ray, you have to start now. For context, for every minute that I wait, my grade actually drops down by one grade. I was like, okay, wait, give me a while. And only after 3 minutes did I actually say something. After that day, I was terrified of anything impromptu. I just felt like my identity was taken away from me. But I had two choices. It's either I feel bad and beat myself up, or I do something about it. So from that day on, I actually took steps to embrace that, to prepare for future impromptu speaking events. So I joined a speaking club in school. I did more impromptu speaking by myself. I learned it by myself. I practiced in front of the mirror. So that was my way of embracing fear. And it's really just taking active steps towards it. Like, embracing fear is a decision, honestly. It's just like deciding and committing. Deciding that you embrace fear and write down the steps that are required to embrace it. Breaking it down. Step one. Find opportunities to speak impromptu. Step two, schedule it into my calendar, right? Step three, find an accountability partner. That's it, right? It's really taking the active steps. This is actually what I do with my clients. This is exactly why we have accountability programs, so that I keep them accountable to embracing their fear. Yeah.
Yeah, I really relate with that.
You just tell me too.
I don't know. Let me think. Okay. I think it's hard for me because you probably experience this a lot with your clients, right? But I'm a perfectionist, but also I think I have high functioning social anxiety. Like, I used to write about how I'd be walking around my complex. I would avoid talking to my neighbors because I don't want to talk to them. So I would literally walk the long way around so that I don't have to make small talk with them, because there's just like a fear of like not being able to navigate the conversation in a way that I could get out of or something. Like, it's just very strange. It's like a lack of control. And I've always been terrified of public speaking. Probably the greatest fear that I felt recently was, we have a speaking club at work, and yeah, it made me think of the time that I also had to impromptu speak in front of my colleagues. And it was fine because they're such loving colleagues. Like, they were just cheering me on, Joyce, you got this. But it was just the worst thing I have ever spoken out loud. And I think it's because the fear often makes it worse. You know, like, if you can manage the fear, it would be so much better, right? But yeah, I think it's just because I feel so much fear on a daily basis that I really have trouble finding like a specific moment. And because I'm a perfectionist, going back to the perfectionist piece, I also pretend that I'm okay. And that's why people don't know. A lot of times people don't know because I'm just like, okay, what would a person that's confident about speaking, how would they act like? Who would they be like, right? That's why when I public speak with my colleagues now doing a presentation, they're always like, Joyce, you're such a good speaker. And inside I'm like dying, you know, I'm like freaking out. But, you know, part of me getting a little older, becoming more vulnerable with my journey is really just being honest, right? Mm-hmm. And realizing like, yo, like I'm scared. Yeah, like I'm so nervous about this. They're like, Joyce, don't be nervous. And being a little bit more honest. And I love what you're talking about because I think that this issue of identity, I think that is core to everything, mm-hmm. which is this is who I am. I can't lose who I am, or I'm trying to be this person. How do I become more of this person? And you're sort of like, no, like you are who you are. And you need to find that and stand strong in that. And I love that approach because it reminds me of this idea of the growth mindset, right? Mm. Sort of like, you know, people who feel like their fear defines them, they feel like, oh, this is who I really am. And if people discover that, then I'm going to be exposed. Like you said, I'm going to be a fraud. But you break it down into like the practical steps and you say, no, this fear doesn't define you. You just have to practice. You can get better at this skill and it doesn't mean anything about you. It means that you're afraid. It means that you haven't practiced a lot, but it doesn't mean that you're like a shitty person or like, it doesn't mean that you're bad at, you know, whatever it is. You're not a bad person, you know, because I think often people, you know, if you're a perfectionist, you're saying, if I'm not perfect, then what am I worth? You know, I don't bring value to the world. I may as well just die, you know, like I felt that way. You know, I've felt certain ways where it's just like, man, I'm not loved because I don't do enough. I don't do enough for the people around me. They wouldn't care if I just disappeared tomorrow. And that's not true, right? Like there's a lot of value that people get. But it's even for somebody like I seem very confident on social media and the way I speak. But there are moments at night where, you know, I'm drinking a little bit and, you know, I'm thinking about my life. I'm like, what is it worth? You know, like, yeah, I have those thoughts. So this issue of identity is really big, right?
You know, I want to chime in with then firstly acknowledging that I go through low moments as well. I mean, to be very honest, even before I got into this podcast, I honestly had a bad day today because I did a workshop yesterday and I got both positive feedback and also things that I could improve on, which is good. I love to hear things I can improve on. But of course, that part of me is like, oh my gosh, I wish I could have done better, you know. So these things do bog me down a little, which is why I think it's important to know what actually adds to your identity? What defines your identity, right? Think about it this way. Like if let's say we just identify as coaches and like maybe I just share for my example, like if I identify myself as a speaking coach and as a speaking coach, I think that people think that speaking coaches never fear of speaking, you know, or they are perfect at their speaking. They'll be great at storytelling. Coaches or maybe life coaches should never feel sad because they're life coaches. You know, all these stereotypes, that if you use those stereotypes to define you, you're going to have a really tough life. I mean, I screw up too when I speak. Like, I'm still growing. I'm still improving. So I think that, at least for me, I don't want to define myself by my career or that title of speaking coach. But my identity is built on my core values. So my core values of empowerment, authenticity, vulnerability. So these are things I hold to heart. Trust, okay? Authenticity, trust, all these values I hold to heart. Even if I change my career, these values stick with me. These values don't change. So that's why when you define yourself and your identity is built upon values as opposed to like your talents or your career title, I think that's where you'll find yourself be a little bit more balanced. Yeah, and I think that's important. Give an example. Many moms, right? And I know because I did a final year project and I had to interview moms. Some of them, their identity is based upon being a mom. And when their children grow up and they leave their house at 18 or whatever, they get married, they feel like their identity is taken away from them because they're not a mom anymore. And that's why I think your identity can't be built upon that title, like I'm a mom, only a mom, or like I'm a business owner. Like, what if you lose your business? Let's just be honest, right? Things happen. What if, you know, you identify yourself as a singer, and what if you lose your voice, right? Then is your identity taken away from you? That's why I think our identity needs to be built on our core values. What do you think?
Yeah, no, totally. I guess I'm wondering, you know, for the people listening, they might be thinking, man, I really resonate with this message. Really, I'm a visual person. So as you were speaking, I see identity as sometimes like the foundation that a lot of us stand upon. And that feeling of like your floor, like your ground, your foundation falling away from you, that's like the feeling that I get. It's just like, oh my gosh, because I think it's less that, oh, some of us do this and some of us don't. I think all of us do it in certain areas of our life, right? Maybe in some areas we have found our authentic voice, and in other areas it's like, oh my gosh, like this still defines me in a way that I didn't realize. Because when I'm listening to you too, I think there's a separation between mind and heart. I think that's normal. I think all of us, as we're growing, our mind is saying, of course, I love feedback. I want feedback because I want to improve. But then your heart's like, oof, that kind of hurt a little bit, you know? So it's about that progress, right? Like as your heart and your mind, it's like constantly trying to bring that to the same place until you can hear feedback one day and be like, genuinely feel, wow, like that was amazing. I love that feedback, you know, and not feel like it defines you as a person. But yeah, it's just a scary feeling, like taking the floor out from under you, because I'm trying to think, what are my sources of identity that, you know, I've really held on to? And I see that throughout my journey, like my entire life, right? I've talked about this in earlier episodes, but, you know, I grew up as a pastor's kid. And so it was all about image. It was all about, hey, be careful what you do because it could affect your father's career. And that is a immense pressure to put on somebody that young. And not like anybody was really putting it on me. It's just like a societal thing. Like that culture was very judgmental, very gossipy. Like they're always talking. It's like, dude, that's none of your business. Like, I don't know why you're gossiping about my life.
Oh my gosh, I resonate with this so much because I also come from a Christian family. Gosh. I cannot even believe how similar we are.
Yeah, that is so crazy. And I think especially in Asian culture too, there's just a lot of like, you know, saving face and image. And that's a little less common, I would say, in America, but obviously still very, you know, prevalent in Asian areas in America, right? Because it's just something that we value as a culture, appearing like we're doing well instead of just doing well, you know? So, you know, I grew up as a pastor's kid, and then that's where I found my identity, which was I'm a leader in the church and I know all the right answers. I can reference to you the Bible verses and I'm strong and all these things. And then I went to college and then I had people sort of, you know, argue with me. It's like, why do you believe that? You know, it's like a very like agnostic college. I went to university in Colorado where it's like very just chill. Like everybody's like, you know, why you have to believe in a religion sort of thing. And so I had to really like justify why I believe in God and Jesus and things like that. And then my faith, it just started shaking, you know, like I was like, what? I don't really know the answers to these questions. And then I went all the way to the other side. I started not believing in God and what's left. When I stop believing in God, it becomes about pleasure. And so I just followed what felt good, except it feels good for a little bit and then it feels bad. So,
Royce, I'm seriously getting goosebumps as you say this.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Completely.
Yeah. And the thing is, all the core of all of this is identity, because on one side, Christianity was my identity, and then I lost that. And there was a period where the floor fell out under me, and I was like, what's happening? Who am I? And then I went all the way to the other side where, like, sex and drugs and all these things, that was my identity. And then I sort of lost that too, you know, when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm a sex and love addict. Like, what do I do now? And now I've sort of found, like, this medium, you know, I have to be careful of, like, man, maybe I find coaching as my identity now. Like, I have to be very clear about who I am and thinking about, man, if I lost my legs tomorrow, like, could I still be who I am, you know? Or if I got sick, all of these things, right? What happens when the floor falls out from under you? And so tell me a little bit of what you're feeling right now, because I feel like you're very, like, connected right now.
Girl, I honestly, if I was right beside you right now, I would just give you a really long hug, because I think we both need it. When I served in the church for 5 years, okay, as a backup singer, and I held on to those beliefs very, very tightly. My dad's not a pastor, but I was brought up in a church, so I was always seeking for love and seeking for a boyfriend, actually, like, all my teenage life, because I didn't love myself. I didn't love myself, and I was looking for someone to love me, right? And so I was always looking for a guy, romantic love. When I had my first boyfriend in junior college, so that was when I was 17 years old, I only knew him for a month. The first date, he asked me to be his girlfriend. I said yes, because I thought that, hey, how cool is it to have a guy to go to the movies with? As if that's the only thing a relationship entails, obviously. So I was like, oh, wait, I have someone that, you know, at my disposal. Oh, my goodness. So that went on, and it was honeymoon period for 1 to 2 months. You know, I was being showered by love, compliments, gifts, dates. I felt like I was on top of the world. I felt so loved. I felt so seen. And after 2 to 3 months, I think reality hit me, because I was serving in church at that point of time, and I felt very guilty. Every single time I went to church, I felt so guilty that I was dating someone that was non-Christian. He's a non-Christian guy, and he, in fact, was an atheist, because he comes from a broken family and his dad is Christian, so he detests his dad. And essentially, that's why he has something against Christianity, because of his family background. And so I didn't see a future with him, honestly, because he's not a Christian guy. And, you know, in my mind, it's like I was brought up to believe that I can only be with a Christian guy. So I went to church, and I always felt so guilty, and I feel like I had no one to talk to. I really felt so disgusting and dirty, to the point that, Joyce, let me tell you, right, there were times where I was physically close to him, like intimate with him, and I would imagine my dad in the same room looking at me with disapproving eyes. I'm not shitting you. Like, I felt like my dad was there looking at me going, like, what the heck are you doing? So wow. It was just like this weird traumatizing thing that I felt so dirty. I felt so like, why do I want this touch? Like, I feel so like disgusting. And it was just so much inner conflict with myself. But I just held it in, you know, and actually the relationship was really toxic, but I didn't want to let go of him. He became very controlling. I didn't want to let go of him because I was afraid that I would never find someone who would love me. And I knew he wasn't good for me, but I was afraid to let him go because I was afraid that I wouldn't find anybody to love me again. Well, eventually after a year, he was the one that broke up with me. And that was good. It was good. It was good that he broke up with me because I would never have let him go. But after he broke up with me, a month later, I started going into the clubbing scene. And, you know, when it's dark and you put on some makeup and you wear less, guys would hit on you. It doesn't even matter how you look. Guys would just hit on you. You get me. I know what you mean. You know. So my confidence shot through the roof, but all for the wrong reasons. My confidence was built upon how guys treated me. And when guys would touch me inappropriately, in my head, it's like, okay, it's because I'm attractive. like I didn't really understand physical boundaries anymore because I just let that happen to me. I just let like guys touch me and all that because I thought that that means that I was attractive and that was normal, right? Maybe it's like media and all these Hollywood shows that you watch and, you know, the way that they show how pretty girls are hit on in the club and like, yeah, oh, wow, I'm pretty, I'm gorgeous, I'm attractive. And I was high on life, you know. But the next morning when you wake up after the alcohol all fades and you're like, oh, wait, what? I'm back to reality again. And I was this way for like a year and a year and a half. And only when I got exposed into the personal development and the entrepreneurship space did I slowly leave the club scene and started, you know, finding my own worth, my own self-worth, and learning how to love myself. Do I love myself completely yet? Maybe no, but much better than last time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a journey I feel like so many of us are on, you know, especially younger people, you know, like we're trying to find ourselves. And, you know, we hear this phrase a lot, like, love yourself. And so if you bring it to like your day-to-day life, right? Like show us some moments where, you know, it's been difficult to love yourself, but you had to choose to love yourself. Like how have you really grown in that?
Oh my goodness. Choosing to love yourself. I'm honestly still learning how to do that now. I feel like right now, you know, I love my work so much. So I work like all the time because I love what I do. I love coaching. I love content creation. I love, you know, speaking and connecting with people across the world. And self-love to me is actually giving myself rest, which I feel like I don't do very often. So choosing to love myself now is blocking time for a break. Like after I you know, finish this podcast, I'm actually going to a bar to have a drink by myself and read a book. Like I booked a reservation and I have to do that because I know if I go home, I'm going to work. I'm not going to chill. I'm just going to work. So that is the, you know, it's really just taking the active decision to give myself a treat. And self-love is different for everybody. Sometimes, you know, investing in a coach is self-love for you. Choosing to go to the gym, even though you hate it. Self-love is tough, right? Self-love may not feel the most comfortable. It might feel uncomfortable because it's out of your comfort zone, but you just got to do it. And the reason why I feel like I overwork myself a lot is because I'm afraid of being left behind. I'm afraid of not being successful. I'm afraid of being insignificant. I'm afraid that if I don't work enough, I won't be able to reach my dream of being a global speaker. But I also know that if I only work, that, you know, I will reach the top and have nobody around me. And that's the last thing that I want. So speaking to people and having perspectives is important. I could be in my little bubble and just work forever, but I choose to connect with other coaches. And actually, one of my coaches who is a purpose coach actually told me this. He asked me, Ray, if you reach the top and you're successful, you're a global speaker, and you look around you and you realize that there's nobody there. You realize that all the coffee sessions that you have are business collaborations, and you can't have someone to just sit by the beach and talk about boys with a martini in your hand. How would that feel? I was like, oh my God, I would hate that. Talking about work all the time is tiring. No matter how much you love your job, you got to rest, you got to chill. So going back to the question, choosing self-love is choosing to prioritize rest for me because I know that I overwork myself. So self-love to me is choosing to rest. Self-love to you or to someone else could be choosing to not be in a relationship because you know you need to learn how to love yourself yet. That could be self-love to you, right? Learning to stay single to love yourself first before you choose to go on Tinder, on Bumble, whatsoever. That could be self-love. But you got to ask yourself what you need the most. Yeah. And sometimes you may not be able to see it. So it's good to talk to people. Trusted friends or coaches or mentors that can see from a third-person perspective.
And it's interesting to think about because often what we need is not always aligned with what we want. So it's about like going to go work out, because you know you need to live a healthy life, but you don't want to. You know, I think it's like, you know, I talk about this a lot, how like self-care is not restorative always, right? Like just because you sit and watch 8 hours of Netflix, that's not necessarily self-love, you know, because you're actually indulging yourself. Maybe you're watching Netflix because you're trying to escape from your life. You don't want to think about it. I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience. So I watch a lot of Netflix, especially when I'm stressed out, because it makes me just like forget for a second. And instead of going into myself and being like, why am I stressed? You know, like let's talk about this. It's sort of like if you have a kid, if they're stressed out, you wouldn't want them to, you know, just like, oh, go play with your toys. You know, I think a good parent would sit down with that kid and be like, tell me what's wrong. And it's like, it's okay to feel this way, and hug them and hold them close and be like, yeah, you know, sometimes we feel that way and that's okay. And oftentimes we need to give ourselves that same sort of love and just telling ourselves like, hey, it's okay. It's okay to feel bad sometimes, and you don't have to run from it. And just wait it out and be with yourself, you know?
100%. And, you know, one thing that my purpose coach, Jeremy, shares with me is, Ray, you don't need to do anything to be worthy. You are worthy just as you are, just as you are. Just be yourself and you are worthy. It's hard to truly internalize that, but I'm starting to do that, trying to. I realized that sometimes it's just allowing yourself to be vulnerable, you know, and accepting love. So 2 years ago, I broke out in full body eczema. And, you know, eczema is like a condition where your skin barrier is very weak, so it could break out. So basically, imagine like a sunburn, but like 10 times worse. So, you know, like my skin was bleeding and parched, you know, from head to toe. And that was, I would say, one of the most vulnerable moments of my life, because I was like frantic. I didn't know what I could do. I couldn't host events. I felt like I didn't want to go out. I mean, since young, I compared myself with others in terms of looks. And here I am, right? Like looking like a red hot tomato, not in a good way. And in those moments, you know, I saw how my mom would sweep my bed full of dead skin, clean my room. My dad would spread Manuka honey all over me, thinking it would help. I don't think it did, but well, he did spread Manuka honey all over me every day and, you know, bring me to the clinic. And in those moments where I felt like so weak, that's where I received the love and the support. When you have that, when you allow yourself to receive love and support, you experience what it's like to be worthy as you are. You know, I didn't have to do anything to receive that love and support. I just had it because, yeah, you're valuable as you are. You're worthy as you are.
I have moments like that too, where the one memory that I'm thinking of, and Kaysen, if you're listening to this, I appreciate you so much. It's just like people don't realize the impact that their words have on you. And so like I was sharing with my buddy Kaysen, like, man, I like this guy and like, I don't think he likes me. And, you know, I just like feel so, I think I shared with him that I just don't feel worthy a lot of times. And he all he said was like, Joyce, you're awesome. Like, you don't have to be anybody different. Like, I think you're awesome as you are. And I remember I just got so emotional because like, I think that's the first time I've really heard somebody say that to me, like very straightforward, of just like, dude, you sitting here is enough for me. And I'm like, what? Like, I can just be. That moment has always really stuck with me. And I think similar to what you're saying, which is that it starts with vulnerability, because if you pretend to be strong, if you pretend to have this image, people can't really see you. And if they can't see you, then you can't prove that experiment that, hey, people will love the real me, because you never tried to show the real you, right? So I think that perpetuates the fear sometimes, because you're like, oh, I get a lot of love when I do well on my speaking engagements. And then you don't show when you're not feeling so confident or things like that, right? Then you start to associate, oh, I get my value from this. And so maybe it's like breaking down those walls and being like, this isn't who I am. I am human. I do all these things, and still feeling that love pour in, like that's powerful, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I did not expect to have this conversation today. By the way, just first time Joyce and I are meeting. Okay. I don't know if you guys can believe this. It's our first conversation. But, you know, that's the power of being vulnerable. I feel connected to you because you share what you shared. Joyce, we can both just share about our wins and the things that make us awesome. And I don't think that we have connected. The reason why we connected, the reason why whoever is listening right now, right, the reason why you're inspired by someone is because you have seen their lows and then your highs. If you just see someone in the spotlight all the time, you won't be inspired by them. You would be jealous of them. Mm. You'll put them on a pedestal. You would think like, I wish I was them. I never want someone to look at me and say, I wish I was Ray. Never. I want them to look at me and say, Ray has made me feel like I can be the best version of myself. And if you want to have someone feel that, if you want to inspire someone like to be the best version of themselves and not to be like you, then you have to share your vulnerable parts, you know? And it's hard. It's really hard because it's hard to be vulnerable because you don't know what the other person would think of you. You don't know if they're going to think that, oh shit, like Ray was so cool, now she sucks, right? Like, sure, you could think that way, fine. But the more haters you have, the more fans you have. Let me just tell you that.
I love that. Yeah. And, you know, I just had the feeling of, you know, if you're listening to this and you just feel very emotional, like maybe you're tearing up. Oftentimes my therapist, she's always looking at me when I tear up and she's like, what's making you tear up? You know, we don't always know, like, we're just like, oh my gosh, I'm so emotional. I don't know why. And I think if you're tearing up, it's a time to dive deeper into yourself and to figure out what's happening. Because, you know, we've talked a lot about self today, and I've often found that people will tear up when they have a disconnection with self and they're realizing, man, like, this is strong wording, right? But I've betrayed myself for a really long time. Like, I haven't advocated for myself. I have talked down about myself. I have said yes when I mean no, or I want to say no. Those are moments of disconnection with self. You know, like I had a moment when I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, you are the only person that's been there for me through everything. I don't have to explain myself to anybody because you've already been there and you've seen it all, you know? And that was a really powerful moment for me. I was bawling. I was crying. I was just like, this is enough, you know, like you seeing me. And so, yeah, I deeply encourage you as a listener. It's like, you are enough as you are. And, you know, maybe right now you hear this and you're like, oh, sure, I'm enough. Like, whatever, what does that mean? But it's like continuing to tell that to yourself, to get what you need, and surrounding yourself with people who are willing to tell you that, you know, whether through actions or words. And sometimes you just have to ask. This was a really scary question for me. I asked recently to one of my best friends. I said, hey, what is it like being friends with me? Like, can you tell me the good and the bad? Like, can you just share that with me? Because often when we ask for the bad, it's not as bad as we think. You know, I thought she was going to like just suddenly spill all this stuff about how I'm a terrible friend. But really, she was just like, oh, maybe you're sometimes maybe a little inconsistent, but I don't mind it. And I'm like, oh, like, thank you. So it's like sometimes when we ask for the truth, when we ask for the things that scare us, it's really not that bad. It's like shining the light on areas that, you know, you look over there. Oh, there's no ghosts. Like there's no monsters. It's just a shadow.
100%. And of course, if people are mean, then self-love is also telling yourself that I want to find new friends. You know, I don't want to be with people who make me feel this way. I think it's important to know that your feelings are validated. Even if five people are like, you know, making certain jokes about you and you feel really affected, okay? Your feelings are validated. Even if like they think that it's okay and they think that it's funny and you don't think it's funny, that's validated as well. I think that's very important to know. And, you know, as Joyce said, you're worthy as you are. I also like to take this time to just share with you that out there, there is at least one person that is going through something similar as to what you are going through. And you could be that beacon for that person. Joyce and I can't be. We have different stories to tell. We have different struggles as you. But you have your unique challenges and struggles that can be an inspiration to someone else. That means that you're given this task, you're given this gift to bring someone out of their dark times, if you like to use that gift for that reason. And so if you're ever comparing yourself with others, just know this. Your story is different from someone else's story. And you're the only one in the world with that unique story, that unique challenge, that unique gift. And now it's your choice if you want to use it. It's making a decision to use that gift, to use those stories.
Where can people find you and see some of the things that you're up to?
You can find me on Instagram at RayMatrix, RaeMatrix. And I do have a free bi-weekly newsletter where I release free worksheets and templates regarding networking, finding your unique voice. I actually have a Find Your Unique Voice worksheet, believe it or not. And you can download it via my newsletter. So all you need to do is to send me a DM on Instagram or go to my link on Instagram and sign up.
Definitely check out her stuff, because the fact that somebody has gone before you and done all of the work and can help you through, like, that's priceless. Mm-hmm. And I can say that from experience, like the people who have coached me, just like, whew. Like, coaches have coaches, y'all.
Yeah.
It's like a whole chain all the way to the top.
Let's take a photo. Okay, I'll take over here. Shall we do a boom so you can like wave?
Sure, yeah.
A boomerang.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just need to move. Okay. One, two, three.